I know you love the true life stories on the Good Glow, so that's exactly what I have for you today. Welcome to the Good Glow podcast with Tracy Holmes. The Good Glow is brought to you with thanks to Electrosol, a simple way to keep on top of your hydration. It's not just for athletes, Electrosol is for anyone who wants an easy way to stay hydrated, whether you're at work, out for a walk, or just getting on with your day. It can also be used to stay hydrated in hot weather. It's available in three flavors. There's always one that's perfect for you, with a mix of key electrolytes like sodium, potassium, and magnesium. Find Electrosol at your local pharmacy or visit electrosol.com. For more. Electrosol is a food supplement and should not replace a balanced diet. Always read the label before use. Hello and welcome. Today we share a story that is deeply moving. It's not a sad story, I promise you that. It's a story of true resilience, overcoming, and immense gratitude. This is a story that proves once again that what you may have thought was the worst thing that could have happened to you turns out to be the opposite. I'll let Tracy tell you the full story. She lives in Greystones with her family, her husband Andrew. Her son Harry was born in 2018, and shortly afterwards, Tracy and Andrew decided to try for another. Shocked, she discovered she was expecting twins. And when Theo and Freddie were born, Tracy was told Freddie has Down syndrome. What could have broken her made her see how strong she really was. On one particular low day, it was an interaction with a lady who was cleaning in Crumlin Hospital that changed everything for her. Was this woman real, or was she an earth angel? Maybe both. Then a sign from the universe cemented her hope even more. And since then, Tracy and her family have never looked back. Freddie has defied all odds. He is changing the world with his spirit and determination. And once he listened to this podcast with Tracy, it isn't hard to see where he got it from. Her book is called Raising Resilience. I hope you enjoy. Tracy Holmes, welcome to the Good Glow podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's delighted to be here.
Yeah, we're sitting in my home. We've known each other for over a year now.
Yeah, almost a year, actually, I think. I think it was like May of last year when I joined the run club.
We ran shoulder to shoulder a couple of times out for our training runs for Chicago. And I got to know a little bit about your story, but I didn't fully understand it until I read your book.
Yeah.
And all you've been through over the last few years.
Yeah. And it's funny because even some of my best friends will say that to me, that they're like, we knew what went on, but we didn't know the depth of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I know so many people that are going through tough times, and the WhatsApp app is very overwhelming because people will ask you in there, how are you? What's going on? And how can you ever explain it?
Exactly.
So let's talk about Tracy. And sorry, just before we get into it, I always get messages from people who listen to The Good Glow and say, your real life stories are my favourite.
Well, as a Good Glow listener, I can agree with that fully.
And here you are.
And here I am.
To tell your real life story. Yeah. As if celebrities don't have real life stories, they're life coaches. But we love the stories from real women because they're the ones that connect. So if you're out for a walk, if you're out for a run, if you're cleaning your house, whatever you're doing, driving in your car, welcome along to this episode. And we really hope you enjoy it. So let's talk about Tracy before children.
Yeah, seems like a long time ago now. But yeah, I was really, really career driven, And I worked for an Irish company called Avoca for many years. So I grew up in Kilmechanic in Wicklow, and Avoca Kilmechanic was on my doorstep. So I had a part time job there while I was in school and went on to study business and events, and loved Avoca so much that I just worked my way up there and to manager level, and went on to work in a few different Avocas over the country, and just loved my job. I met Andrew, my now husband, through Avoca. He was a head chef in one of the locations, and when we got together, we set up our own business together, Andrew Holmes Catering. In 2013, and we went on then to get married in 2017. And soon after that, obviously, you get asked all the questions like, when are the kids? And it wasn't something that we really talked too much about. And we were both so focused on our careers and really career driven. But Andrew was always really keen to have kids. And I never considered myself a hugely maternal person. I didn't coo over the babies or have that really burning desire to be a mom. But once we got married and you kind of thought more about it, and I was like, oh, to have somebody that's half me, half him, and build a family together, it felt like the natural thing to do. So we went on to have Harry in August of 2018. And yeah, he just became a part of our world. Like, you know, we were self-employed, we had the business, and I didn't take any maternity leave, which I look back now and I'm like, oh, you know, I really kind of wish I had taken more time to be in the moment more. But that was just part of me being so career driven and so independent. But, you know, he was a great baby and really just fitted into our life so well. And we'd always made the decision that if we were going to have one, we were going to have two. Neither of us come from being only children, and we've had siblings. And that was a conversation we had before we decided to have Harry, was, well, if we're having one, we're having two. But I said, I'm done at two. You know, I don't see myself with a big family, still want to be a working mom, and two just seems like enough. So a couple of years after Harry was born, we decided to have a second baby. And
that was during COVID,
that was
right?
During COVID, yeah. So the business, you know, it's predominantly wedding catering. So the business kind of stopped overnight in terms of our weddings when COVID hit. But we also had a delicatessen in Kilcool in Wicklow, and that had only been open a month when COVID hit. But it really put us on the map because we were able to trade under government guidelines as a takeout eatery. So it really put us on the map in that locality, and it saved us during a time when we had no business, when our predominant business had been taken overnight.
That's a real moment of the universe having
back,
isn't it? That a month before COVID, that you had opened a cafe.
February 2020, yeah.
And before that, your whole business was catering for events.
Events and weddings, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So life was still busy, but much quieter than what we were used to. So we kind of had a bit more structure to our lives. We weren't gone working every weekend. So it just gave us a little bit more balance in life. So it actually seemed like the perfect time to have a second child, because we were a little bit slower living than we had been in previous years. So yeah, I fell pregnant with the twins just before Christmas of 2021. So in the Christmas of 2020.
The Tracy that I know now is very mindful, very connected to your heart. You are heart-led, and it's very obvious to me that you are doing the work, as we call it. Were you like that back then?
No.
Really?
No, not at all. I was just go, go, go all the time. And I feel like I still am today, but just in a different way. You know, I'm so busy. Like, I have three children, so like it's busy. But I feel like my priorities have shifted, and I put way more emphasis on myself and taking time for myself and looking after my mental health. And yeah, just really minding myself when I would never have in the past.
So tell us about the moment that you found out that you were pregnant with twins.
Yeah. So as I said, you know, we're going to have two children. And then all of a sudden at a scan, in early scan in January of 2021, we're told, no, there's two babies here. So, you know, I've talked to other twin parents about this, and there's conflicting, you know, experiences people go through. On one hand, people are like overjoyed and thrilled and it's amazing. And then there are other parents like me who were terrified and scared, and it wasn't what they expected. And they didn't see twins in their life plan. And because I already had one, I knew how hard it could be. And I knew those late nights, the feeding, the sleeping, trying to just have any time to yourself when you have one is hard, especially in those newborn days. But then to double that and have a toddler, because Harry was going to be, the twins were actually due on Harry's third birthday. So Harry was going to, like, would be three when they were born. So still very much a toddler, and a very busy toddler at that. So yeah, it wasn't the rainbows that I, you know, that some people might experience.
And so obviously that moment was such a shock. But as time went on, did you
adapt to and get used to the idea that you're having twins?
Oh, yeah. 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 Like, it was that initial shock. And it definitely took a good few weeks to wrap our head around it and to see how we were going to make this work. But like anything in life, like, you know, you just deal with it. And we knew we'd make it work. We knew we have both have great supportive families. We have a great network around us. And we just knew, okay, this wasn't in the plan. This is going to be chaotic, but we'll deal with it.
Yeah. Like you do, I suppose. You just see the bright side of everything.
Yeah.
So how did your pregnancy go?
Yeah, so I mean, really straightforward at first. I went for an early scan just because, like, I'm a bit of an anxious person anyway. And, you know, I was like, I just want to know everything's okay. And so I think it was 8 weeks when we went for that scan and found out we were having twins. But yeah, as the months went on, I just had this intuition or this gut feeling that something wasn't right. It just felt like one twin was more active than the other. So when we had that first scan in the hospital at 12 weeks, they automatically put it as twin one and twin two based on their position. And I was having fraternal twins, so separate sacs, separate placentas. And I could just feel that twin one was more active than twin two, and twin two was just a bit quieter. And I made fairly regular trips into the maternity hospital for scans and for checkups because I just felt like something was amiss. I was always reassured when I went in, you know, everything's fine, you know, heart rate's fine and all's okay. But I just couldn't shake the feeling that something was amiss.
Yeah, that feeling is, I think it's only through experience that we get used to actually listening to that voice and not pushing it out of our heads.
Mm-hmm.
So you went in then for a number of scans and they reassured you that everything was okay, but it was at the 28-week scan that things took a turn.
Yeah, yeah. So I hit that 22 weeks, I was having scans every 2 weeks just to check on growth and all of that. And so 22, 24, 26 weeks, all fine. Went in at 28 weeks and they just spent longer looking at the scan and dragging the cursor back and forth. And I was like, well, there's something miss here. I knew straight away something was going on. And when I questioned it, they said, we're just not seeing as much growth in twin two in the last couple of weeks than we have in twin one, who was trending as they should be. So they had a consultant come and look at the scan. And then it was said that I would go for a Doppler scan, which is a scan to check the function of the placenta. And my placenta was lower functioning. And I was admitted into hospital then, and I was told that I had something called placenta insufficiency, and that once it kind of happens, it doesn't ride itself. And the aim would be to get me to 34 weeks, and I needed to be admitted because I needed to have the Doppler scan every day, and I needed to have traces twice a day, which is where they put the monitor on your belly and just check the heart rate and stuff. So they needed to do that in the morning and the evening, as well as the Doppler scan. And the hope would be to get me to 34 weeks. So I was 28 weeks or going on 29 weeks at this point. And
What's going through your mind when you get told at 29 weeks you have to stay in hospital and you've got a baby Harry at home?
Yeah, it was awful because I hadn't been away from Harry for more than 2 nights. So I was like suddenly looking at like 5-6 weeks in hospital away from him. And I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I was devastated. I really, really was. And I really fought to go home and come in daily because I'd said, you know, is there a risk to me being at home? And, you know, my waters weren't going or anything. So, you know, there was no risk of infection, but they had just said because they needed to monitor like 3 times a day, it made more sense for me to be in there. But yeah, I was terrified.
So tell us about that time, because I suppose the day that you went into hospital, your life was never the same again.
No.
But you had a lovely experience with the people in the hospital at that time.
Yeah, I did. So yeah, I got admitted that day, and that evening another girl was admitted, and we were put in the beds beside each other, and we got chatting, and she was having twins and I was having twins, and she was having two girls and I was having two boys. And yeah, we just connected straight away. And I just really feel like in times like that, the universe just really put people in your path. And I just know that we were both put in each other's path to get each other through that time. And I think we both had similar length of stay ahead of us, but we actually both only, lasted to, like, she did a week and I did 11 days.
And did it feel like, were you telling yourself, this is a moment in time and then my life will go back to, inverted commas, normal?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I fully believed, you know, I'm here to get something done, to get the job done, and we'll go home and everything will be fine. And I think I knew that I'd be having premature babies because I was told, you know, the hope is to get to 34 weeks. So I'm still thinking, you know, that's 6 weeks too early. So I know I have a length of time ahead of me. But when you're in there and you're admitted because you know you're going to have your baby early, you know, they're really great at getting the pediatric doctors to come and talk to you and kind of let you know what's ahead of you. So in a way, you know, knowledge is power and you kind of have an inkling of what to expect. So yeah, I definitely could see the finish line.
Yeah. And tell us about the finish line and the day that they came along.
Yeah. So as I said, 11 days later, I went for a scan and the Doppler scan. And yeah, the placenta had slowed right down to the point that they weren't happy with. And as soon as the girl who was doing the sonographer said, I'm going to go and get the consultant to come in, I just knew. And when she came in and she looked, I just said to her, I said, you're delivering today, aren't you? And she said, yeah. So I kind of froze in that moment. I kind of just felt like, okay, autopilot. I was like, okay, just need to get the game face on and deal with this. And went back to the ward and rang Andrew to tell him to come in and tried to keep it as matter of fact as I could. And he came in and they were doing all the kind of checks on me. Now, they did say, you know, we're going to be delivering today. It is going to be C-section, but this is not an emergency. We're not rushing you down to theatre. Like, we have a few hours, we have time. So they really tried to get me to relax. And when Andrew got in and the midwife came round and, you know, she's doing the checks and she said, June 11th, this is the day your boys are going to be born. We both just fell to pieces. It just was the real dawn of realization that, oh God, this is really happening.
And who was the strong one in your relationship up until this point?
Oh, like Andrew. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think he just, he's a really calm person in nature anyway. Like, he doesn't really let anything faze him. He'll always kind of have be solutions, you know, have a solution for everything. Whereas I get more in my head, or I'm a panicker, I'm a worrier. Like, his kind of, he just thinks, you know, if we can't control it, why are we worrying about it?
He's a real entrepreneur.
Yes, he is. Yeah. 100%. Especially during the COVID times when I was like, that's it, our business is gone. He was like, nope, there's always a solution.
So you were in safe hands then with the amazing staff, with Andrew, and tell us then about the birth.
Yeah, so I think I hadn't really given myself enough warning or enough thinking of having a C-section, because I didn't have a C-section on Harry. And I think I blocked it out a little bit because I was terrified. Like, I hate needles. I hate the idea of a surgery. So to know that you were having something done that was out of your control, I think I blocked it out until I really had to face it. And it was on that day. And once we kind of went down to the theatre and, you know, you have those bright lights and, you know, the room, the surgical room and loads of doctors, I fell apart in that room. And Andrew wasn't allowed in until we were about to start. But I had a midwife with me who'd come from the antenatal ward to kind of chaperone me. And she stayed with me and she really just kept me calm and held my hand the whole time. And until Andrew could come in, she just stayed by my side. And, it, you know, it's scary. It's really, really scary to go into that situation, especially 10 weeks too early as well, because you just don't know what's going to happen on the other side then.
Yeah. And your boys were known as Twin One and Twin Two.
Yeah.
Twin One is Theo and Twin Two is Freddie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had your concerns over Twin Two, obviously,
yeah,
at this point.
Yeah,
big concerns, or were you?
Yeah. Like, we knew from the rough estimations that they were doing on the scans that Theo was, or Freddie was going to be smaller, and they had guessed weights, you know, that one would be about 3.5 pounds and one would be 2.5 pounds. So doesn't sound like a lot in the grand scheme of things, but when you're looking at babies that small, a pound is a big difference.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was concerns over how they'd be, how like what was on the other side. But the pediatric doctors were in the room and we were reassured that as soon as they come, the pediatric doctors are taking over. And to the point where they said, you know, you're probably not going to be able to see them straight away because we'll have to get them straight to the pediatric doctors who were in the same room. But yeah, it was scary.
Yeah. And I think, well, it's so great that there was so much communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think a scary thing about a C-section is the amount of people in the room.
Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
For twins, is it double?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you have the experience of them crying when they were born?
Yeah, we did actually. Yeah, we did. When they were both born, we did hear cries, which was really reassuring for me, you know, to just hear that. And we got to see them, you know, for a brief second, you know, showing over the curtain, like, you know, wrapped in the blanket. We did get to see them for a very brief second. So, yeah, it was really reassuring to hear the cries.
You probably thought at that point that things were as tough as they could be mm-hmm. for you that day.
Yeah.
But it was about to get a lot tougher.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, they were whipped off to the NICU and I was sent to recovery and Andrew accompanied them to the NICU, but then had to leave. And he came back to me and he had said, you know, I've seen them. They're OK. The doctors are really looking after them and the consultant is going to come and speak to us. And I just thought, okay, yeah, like that's normal. That's what I'd expect. At this point, I was moved from recovery to the postnatal ward. So about an hour or so after the birth, a consultant came in to speak to us and she told us that, you know, they were in the NICU and they were doing okay. And Theo was 3 pounds 6 and Freddie was 2 pounds 5. So pretty spot on to their
predictions.
Yeah. And then she said, you know, they're both on CPAP, which is a breathing support that is really standard when babies are born premature, but they're doing really well and they're holding their own. I was like, okay, this is great. This is great. And she said, I do have something to tell you though. And I can still just remember everything about that moment. And she said, we believe Freddie has Down syndrome. And it just turned my world upside down. The initial thought that went through my head is that you can't get that kind of news after the birth. Like you'd know, you'd be told in pregnancy that if your child's going to have Down syndrome, but you're not, you know, you can have genetic testing done, which we didn't, but it doesn't show up in scans, unless babies, like 50% of babies born with Down syndrome have heart defects. And a lot of the time diagnosis can be made from that. But Freddie didn't have any heart complications, which was great. But yeah, it wasn't picked up in pregnancy. So it just rocked our worlds. We just couldn't believe it.
Obviously, like when I read your book, even with you speaking about it now, like I feel my nervous system is, mm-hmm. I'm like kind of panicking a little bit just thinking of you in that moment. But do you feel differently about that moment now or is it still the same?
Oh God, yeah, yeah. One of the first things I said to the consultant was he'll have no quality of life. And that was my uneducatedness around Down syndrome. I didn't know anyone personally with Down syndrome. Obviously, I knew what it was. But I didn't know anybody with it. And I had made assumptions. And that is just so far from the truth. Like somebody said to me recently, you know, if you could change Freddie having Down syndrome, would you? And if you had have asked me that day or even in the months after that day, I would have been like 100% yes. But now it's 100% no, because Freddie is who he is. Because he has an extra chromosome, because he is Freddie, and without having Down syndrome, without having that extra copy of chromosome, he wouldn't be who he is, the Freddie that we know, that we love, that has proven he's an absolute survivor and warrior. So no, like if he took away that, he'd be a completely different person.
That's so beautiful, Tracy. And that's almost a moment. The overcoming, the realization, the gratitude normally comes at the end of a Good Glow podcast, but I think it's really important to insert it into this part of the story because people may be listening and feel scared for you in that moment and for themselves, and it rocks your world to hear someone having to go through that. But to know how you feel now, and I asked you this at your book launch, if you could go back and forget about the doctor, forget about Andrew, forget about anyone else in your life, if you could face you in that moment, if you now in 2025 could go back and hold Tracy's hand in that moment, what would you say to her?
Oh my God, like, I just think in that moment you grieve, which is, I actually spoke to somebody about this recently, you know, how hard it can be to grieve a living person, because you're grieving the child you thought you were having. In my case, I was grieving the twins I thought I was going to have. And I think that's a process that you have to go through when you get any kind of postnatal diagnosis. But if I could go back now, I would say, you know, everything is going to be okay. Like, life may be different. And that's the thing. Like, life is going to be more challenging for Freddie. Like, there's no point in pretending it won't be. But it can still be a beautiful life, and it can still be a really fulfilled life. And that is what I would say to myself back then. Yeah.
Wow, that's so powerful. And it's in that day, and obviously it took like such a journey, which we'll get into, but you now see life through a different lens, but your kids are different people than they would have been. Yeah. Like, more compassionate, more caring. Like, what are they going to teach the world? Yeah. And you guys as a family unit, the work that you're doing, it's so powerful, and it's turned into your purpose.
Yeah.
It's such a long journey to get to where you are now in 2025. And it had to get worse before it got better, did it? Did it get worse from that moment, or was that the worst moment?
Oh, no, it got so much worse. So Freddie went on to also have medical complications, which we didn't find out that day because they didn't know right then. But as he progressed over the next few weeks, he was having feeding difficulties, and it kind of stemmed from his lungs being underdeveloped. And also, anybody born with Down syndrome has a low muscle tone. So it does extend to muscles and joints, and it also extends to the tongue. So he was having issues with sucking and swallowing. So he wasn't able to breast or bottle feed. So he had a feeding tube. And Theo also had a feeding tube when he was born, because they have to get to a certain point when they can learn to feed. But when that was introduced, Theo just took off, whereas Freddie didn't. So Theo came home at 5 weeks, 5 weeks after he was born, so at 35 weeks gestation, and Freddie had to stay, which we thought would be a few weeks longer. But between the feeding complications, the lung issues, and he caught a lot of infections that kept him in hospital. He actually went on to spend his first year of life in hospital, and he came home 3 weeks after his first birthday.
Tell me about, was it difficult for you after you were given the news to tell your mom or tell those closest to you? Like, how do you tell them?
Yeah. Oh, like, I rang my best friend Nicola because I just said I'd need to speak to somebody that's a little bit removed from the situation. Even though we're so close, I was like, I felt like I really needed to talk to her. And, you know, she was obviously shocked when I told her, but like, she, you know, I suppose really said the right things. You know, everything's going to be fine, and, you know, everything's okay. But I really struggled to talk to our families, because I suppose you're bringing this to them as well, you know, so they're going to be impacted by this too. So I really kind of felt a shame, I think, in a way, of bringing that to people's lives as well. Yeah.
You are so honest about all the feelings that you were having. And we need people like you, Tracy, to speak from the heart. As difficult as that is, you help other people feel seen. And that is so important, I think, in this day and age. But you struggled to really connect with Freddie.
Yeah. Yeah, I really did. And that was evident the first time I visited the NICU after they were born. And I just felt more drawn to Theo. And I just guess I felt disconnected from Freddie, that I didn't ask to have a child with Down syndrome. It wasn't my choice. I was angry that I didn't know. And I just felt initially by blocking it out was the easiest way to deal with it. And I did just feel more drawn to Theo. Yeah.
Do you think that was a feeling that you had let him down, or is it that he had let you down?
I definitely think more me. I felt like I had brought him into this world. I felt, you know, disappointed in myself and my body. I felt like my body had let me down. Like, why couldn't I have got further along? And that goes for both of them. You know, they're both lying there really premature in incubators in the NICU, and you're like, is this my fault? You know, and you go through that thought process. Yeah.
You speak so beautifully about Andrew, and he seemed to come around to things much quicker.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. You know, he just said from the first conversation we had together outside of with the consultant, you know, he just said, you know, he's our son. And as much as Theo, as much as Harry, and it's going to be different, but it's going to be OK. You know, he's our boy. And I really didn't take that in. You know, I look back now and I'm like, God, that was such a beautiful conversation. But it kind of went over my head at the time. I was just so, as I said before, I was in grief. Yeah.
Wow. I actually feel so emotional thinking of him saying that, because that's like everything you needed to hear in that moment.
Yeah. And also the consultant, you know, I said to the consultant, you know, he'll have no quality of life. Her response was, he absolutely will. And I think I look back at that moment and I'm so grateful for that as well, because I've talked to many, many parents in the Down syndrome community who've had postnatal diagnosis, and you know, the response a lot of the time can be very negative. And I'm really thankful we had such a positive, the news broken to us in such a positive way.
Have you ever seen that person again?
No. Well, we've connected online. One person in particular who had twins with Down syndrome. And when they delivered the news that one of them had Down syndrome, they also handed her an adoption leaflet and said, you know, in case you want to give this child up, which is awful. But I also have friends in the community of Down syndrome who haven't had positive experiences when the news has been broken. So it's just really heartbreaking to hear those stories, and makes me really grateful for the experience that we did have.
Yeah. And that is why it's so important for you to use your voice and educate people.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that you share that story of how the news was told to you and how you felt supported in that moment. So Freddie then moved to Crumlin Hospital.
He did. So after when we knew the feeding difficulties were ongoing, he wasn't going to get off the feeding tube that quickly. Within the maternity hospital, they only have so much scope to help children come off feeding tubes. And he needed the support of the speech and language team in Crumlin Children's Hospital. So it was said we had two options. We could get trained up on the tube feeding in the maternity hospital and go home and get an outpatient appointment for Crumlin. Or we could transfer straight to Crumlin and get seen straight away, because if we went home and got seen as an outpatient, then we could be waiting months and months. Whereas if we went and he was admitted as an inpatient, stay there for a few days, get trained up, get linked in with speech and language, he'll just get more support quicker. So that's what we decided to do.
Wow. So I can't even begin to imagine how you were coping during this time. But you had a conversation with a lady in Crumlin Hospital that seemed like a moment when you changed your perspective on having Freddie.
Yeah.
How old was he at this point?
So he was 4 months old. 4 months old at that point, yeah.
And tell us about that day.
Yeah. So I had actually come back from taking a week off from the hospital, because what had happened in Crumlin when he got admitted for the tube feeding is he caught an infection, and it snowballed then, and he was staying in for longer, and then the lung complications were discovered. And during that time, I had a mental health breakdown. You know, I completely lost it. I was trying to keep it together. I was trying to be at the hospital with Freddie and be home with Theo and give Harry what he needs. And I just crumbled. And the advice that was given to me was, take some time away from the hospital. The doctors and nurses are there. You know, it is COVID, so grandparents are not allowed to visit. But on this occasion, we'll let grandparents in to give you a bit of a break. Stay home, get some rest, and you know, just take the break. So I did. And when I went back into the hospital to be with Freddie about a week later, we were sitting up on the ward and I had him out of his cot on my chest, and a cleaner came into the room and she was busy about cleaning the room. And she then said to me, I had a girl like your boy. And without saying any more, I knew she was talking about Down syndrome. And I questioned it then. I said, with Down syndrome? And she said, yeah. She said, you know, I was devastated when I learned that she had Down syndrome, but she was the best thing to ever happen to me. And as she was talking, I knew she was referencing the past tense, but I didn't want to just assume. So I just said, how's your daughter now? And she said, oh, she passed away a few years ago. She had a heart condition and she was lucky to live as long as she did. We talked a little bit more, and then as she was leaving the room, she said, "Treasure that boy, he's a blessing." And I really feel like that was just such a shift for me in that moment. I had talked to so many people over the previous 4 months, like, you know, the therapists in the maternity hospital, like Andrew, my family, my friends, the mental health specialist who I seen when I had the breakdown. And none of the conversations I had with them were as profound as I had with that cleaner. And you just know in that moment that it's connection of people that have been through similar experiences can be so powerful and so healing. And for me, she gave me that gift.
What did you feel like when she left the room?
Oh, like I bawled my eyes out. And I looked at Freddie in a different way from that moment. Like, I remember looking down at him when he was on my chest, and I just, my heart soared in that moment, because I think for the first time I saw him as Freddie and not as, you know, his Down syndrome features. You know, I saw him as Freddie first, and that came second. And before that, Down syndrome always came first, and him as a person, as a human being, came second. And that shift happened in that moment.
It's so incredible. Like, thinking back to that moment, do you ever have a feeling like, was she real? Or
like I have. And it's actually funny, because a friend of mine in the community of Down syndrome as well had the exact same experience with the same cleaner around the same time in the same hospital. So it's just like, she's doing incredible work, you know, for us moms who are going through a, you know, a diagnosis that we're struggling to come to terms with. She gave us perspective, and you just, there's just not enough words to express the gratitude for that.
Do you know who she is?
Or? Yeah, I do. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's like an earth angel.
She is. Yeah. Yeah.
So I know we're kind of skipping really quickly through the story, and I just recommend everyone to read your book. I read it in less than 2 days, just went on the journey with you. It's such a special story and just so beautiful in every way. But I wanted to ask you, because I got to the point in your book where you asked for a sign.
Yeah.
And that was after listening to Gabby Bernstein on The Good Glow.
Yep.
And I'd never heard this story, and mm-hmm. I read it for, you didn't even tell me.
Yeah, I know.
But tell me about the day of asking for a sign and what that brought to you.
Yeah, yeah. So I wrote about it in the book, and it was actually funny, because even the day when we were running together in Phoenix Park and I was telling you about my book, I was like, do I tell her that she's in the book or not? But yeah, so I was driving back from the hospital. We were still on our hospital journey. Freddie was still in. We had just come through another ICU admission, and I was really struggling. I was like, when will this end? It was trauma after trauma. And I decided to stick on the podcast. I hadn't listened to it in a long time, and I used to be like an avid listener. You know, it was my Sunday ritual with a walk to listen to it, and I hadn't listened to it in ages. So I stuck on the latest episode. I didn't even go back. I was like, I'll just stick on the episode that came out this week, and it was with Gabby Bernstein. And she talked about asking the universe for a sign. And you shared your experience of asking for a sign. And I just said, you know, what have I got to lose? Not something I'm into, but, you know, what have I got to lose at this point? So turned off the podcast and was talking aloud to myself, saying, you know, I need to know all this is for a reason. I need to know what we're going through is for a greater reason. And I ask for the sign of a sunflower. And I don't even know where that came from, but it was just what the first thing that came to my mind. And no short than 10 minutes later, I'm driving along and there's a huge picture of a sunflower on top of a road sign driving into Wicklow.
Wow.
And I was like, no, no. Like, I just couldn't believe it. And a friend of mine, another Georgie Durkin, like, she talks about this when she talks about signs. She's like, sometimes when we get our sign, we don't believe it. So we look for a signier sign. And I think that's what happened to me. And I was like, no, I'm not going to change my sign, but I'm going to ask to see a sunflower again. And when I got home, I was so overwhelmed. And my mom was minding the other two boys at home. And I said, I'm just going to go out for a walk. Just need to clear my head after the day. And she said, yeah, yeah. So I went out, and we have a primary school just sitting at the end of our road. So I was walking by, and I just looked up at the primary school as I'm walking by it. And there was pictures of about 20 sunflowers sitting in the window. And I was like, okay, I'm converted. I believe in this now. And I just decide then to just surrender. You know, this is for a reason. It's all going to come good. Everything's going to be okay. You just need to have hope. And that honestly, like, I'm not even exaggerating when I say it changed my life, because not only in the situation that I was in that it did give me hope, but just in the past 4 years, it's given me so much hope. And I'm just so grateful to now have that gift.
Wow, it's so powerful, isn't it, when you get your sign? And I think it just takes the pressure or burden off your shoulder. Like, you're always trying to make sense of it, but when you get your sign, you can at least trust that there's a higher power,
a higher
leading
power.
You.
Yeah.
When you say hope, you were looking for hope. What were you hoping for?
Well, I was hoping, you know, that this, it would all come to an end soon and Freddie would be home to us and we could get on with some kind of normal life. But I think just a hope for a more peaceful future. It was just so chaotic, you know, physically trying to split yourself between your children in different places was just exhausting. And our relationship was suffering because we were both ships in the night. Our business was suffering because, you know, ultimately we couldn't give our full attention to the business, and just needed to know that a more peaceful time was coming. And I think it gave me that clarity.
Yeah. Can you tell me about, like, there's obviously so many rock bottom moments on the journey for you, but what was the worst?
The worst was Christmas of 2021. When Freddie had got sick with a combination of RSV, the respiratory illness, and the norovirus, the winter vomiting bug. So we had them both together. He was really unwell, and they made the decision that he had to be moved to ICU for closer monitoring. And when he went to ICU, things just got worse and worse. And we were called in to the family room at one point, and I was like, I do not want to go into that family room because I know what's on the other side of that. And it was our worst nightmare when we were told, you know, we've done everything we can do and we don't know if he'll make it through the night. Yeah. And nothing prepares you for that. And in that moment as well, as I said, Andrew's always been the stronger one in the relationship, but he crumbled in that moment. And I just had to find this inner strength to somehow, you know, walk out that door and somehow make sense of what just happened. But in true Freddie fashion, he shows he's a fighter, he shows he's a survivor. And within hours of that conversation, he made strides towards getting better, really small, but steps in the positive direction. And 10 days after that conversation, he was out of ICU. Yeah.
What did you feel like when the sun rose the next day?
Oh, like, it's actually, like, you know, I talk about the Down syndrome diagnosis and how, you know, I wouldn't change it now, but ultimately it was the medical stuff that we went through that really makes me see past Down syndrome now. Because when you have a child that's so medically unwell and you're told that they might not make it through the night, it really puts everything in perspective. And I actually remember there was a child with Down syndrome born a month before Freddie. And she had no medical complications or anything. And, you know, she went home and she thrived and, you know, she did fantastically. And I remember thinking when we were going through the depths of this medical stuff, going, I wish him having Down syndrome was all I had to worry about, you know?
Yeah.
Because the medical stuff was so heavy and so scary. And I think that came, you know, I honor that now, because I'm like, now that we're past the medical stuff, because he got better, because he's proven time and time again that he can fight any obstacle put in his way, I'm like, you know, it's really nothing. You know, yes, he has Down syndrome. Yes, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He's going to have challenges in life, but it's nothing he's not able for, because he's proven how incredibly strong he is. Like, I don't know how many people can say that their child is the strongest person they know, but he's the strongest person I know. And I get so emotional when I say that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So beautiful. Can you remember a moment? Was it the day that Freddie came home that you felt finally peaceful?
No, I think that came a little while later, because when he came home, it was like having the hospital transported to our house, because he was still tube fed. He was on oxygen. He was on CPAP at night time. You know, so it really, it didn't end just because we came out of the hospital. It was small steps that had to be taken to kind of get to the point of being, I suppose, at some point an acceptance of, you know, this being normal life. I think for me, it was when we were told when he left the hospital that he could be on oxygen for up to 5 years. You know, that is, with the type of lung condition he has, that can be the case. And when we got the phone call, like 4 months after he came home from hospital, to say they'd reviewed his latest study and he could come off oxygen, I was like, you know, this boy's incredible. And, you know, we just, it, as time went on over the course of the first year home, it was, you know, he really shed the medical stuff. And I think it was their second birthday at home when I was, you know, like, okay, like, this is good, like, life is good and everything is okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
It gives people so much hope that you can get through something so challenging and feel happy again.
Yeah.
A short break to thank Electrocell for supporting the Good Glow this season. So what do electrolytes do? Well, they help you stay hydrated by helping your body absorb and retain water, keeping you energized and refreshed. They simply replace fluids and essential electrolytes lost due to exercise, hot weather, travel or illness. Electrocell is available in flavors like blackcurrant, lemon and raspberry and orange. It's vegan friendly, gluten-free, caffeine-free and GMO-free. You can find even more information on electrocell.ie.
Can I talk to you a little bit about language? And because I think people, they want to say the right thing, but out of fear of saying the wrong thing, they say nothing at all.
Yeah.
So can you just educate us a little bit on what people can say to you about Freddie?
Yeah. So, you know, Freddie has Down syndrome. You know, he's a person first. So we always use person first language. So Freddie has Down syndrome. He is not Down syndrome. He's not a Downs baby. He's not, you know, he's not a Down syndrome child, you know, and these are things that are said. And, you know, I do meet it with compassion because most of the time, because people are just not educated. And that's what I hope to do, is to educate people on the language. And, you know, most of the time, if the setting is you know, appropriate, I'll correct them. But what really bothers me, what really, really bothers me, is the medical professionals still using the language, you know, of, you know, oh, you know, because he has Downs. And I'm just like, come on, you know better. Like, you know, and this is what we're teaching our medical students. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not all medical professionals, but some. And they're who are teaching our medical students now. And you really want them, you really hope that the language is evolving as the generations move. So, yeah, just person first always.
Okay, so Freddie has Down syndrome.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that, because, like, I think, especially on the Good Glow, I always want to help people, I suppose, reach out to somebody who may be struggling and just give them a little bit of knowledge and what the right thing to say is. And
yeah.
So your Instagram is called Three Bros and Me.
Yeah.
And I love that, because they are three bros.
They are three bros. They are.
And what are they like
oh
now?
Oh my God, they are, like, it's so funny because, like, Theo already was like chalk and cheese. Like, Theo's just like absolute powerhouse. You know, he's so feisty. He knows what he wants, you know. And Freddie's just that bit more gentle. But they have an amazing bond. You know, I was so worried, because they spent their first year apart, that, you know, that twin bond was going to be lost. And, you know, twins are meant to be together. They probably feel like a part of them is missing, you know, and all these things went through my head. But, you know, they wake up every day and they have a hug first thing in the morning. And just throughout the day, you'll see, even people have commented on it who see them out and about, or friends of mine who'll see them, you know, they'll go off and they have, because they have such different interests, they'll go off and they'll both do their own thing. And then they just randomly come back together through the day and have a little hug, and then they'll go off again. And it's just, you know, it's so heartwarming to see that twin bond is real. And then Harry, you know, Harry and Theo kill each other. You know, they have that, that brotherly love-hate relationship, but they have, like you said earlier on, you know, they have such compassion for Freddie. And, you know, they just know intuitively, like, you know, there's just some things he's not able for, and they know to go a little more gently with him on that. And, you know, they really know that that people are different and that there's differences and that's okay. And, you know, they ask the questions and I try to answer them as best I can. You know, I'm still learning as we go on and as the questions that I'm asked, but I really encourage them to ask the questions because, you know, sometimes you can see, you know, parents say like, oh, you know, what's wrong with him or something? And they'll shush them away. Like, you know, out of kindness, they'll think that's out of kindness, but like, no, stop. Like, you know, like I don't mind kids coming up and asking questions. You know, I don't mind the innocence of like, what's wrong with him? You know, because I'm happy to educate and in the best way you can.
What do you say in that moment?
So, you know, I just say, you know, Freddie's a little bit different. You know, he has something called Down syndrome and it just means that he'll process things a little bit slower and he can be a little bit more slower to do things like walk and talk and feed. But, you know, if everybody was the same, life would be boring. So, you know, he's just a little bit different, but everybody's different. So.
Yeah. Wow. That's brilliant. Can you tell me about, like, obviously we started this podcast talking about Tracy before kids and, you know, your life then. Can you tell me, like, your last God wink or five star moment on your own journey, like without the boys?
I think for me, being by the sea is such a big thing. Like I am one of those people who got into sea swimming during lockdown, but I just love being by the sea. So any morning that I can be down there for sunrise in the sea, having a coffee after is just like those five star moments for me. But also on the bigger scale, I never saw myself as a mom and I never saw this life for me. You know, I always saw the career driven that I was going to be so successful in my career. And, you know, I'm currently studying in motherhood studies with an Australian woman called Amy Taylor-Cabaz. And I'm getting like so much fulfillment and can see an absolute, you know, passion growing in that area. And to say that to me, you know, 10 years ago, I'd be like, what now? Like, no way. But, you know, it's just life works in mysterious ways. And this is like being a mom and having a child with additional needs and advocating for him and advocating for maternal mental health, which is something I feel so passionately about, having had my own struggles during that time, is just something just brings me so much joy.
Wow. So, do you feel happy?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I feel content, you know, and I don't think I can ever look back on a time in my life where I felt content because I'd always be chasing something, you know, always chasing the next thing and never really took time to acknowledge the achievements or acknowledge what I've been through or to give yourself the pat on the back. Whereas now, like, little things are so, like, Freddie only started walking in the last couple of months, you know, and he's almost four. That's what I mean about things just taking that little bit longer. But like, you know, just in those moments, it's like, whoa, this is incredible. Or, you know, Theo has this little friend who he plays with, his little best pal. And, you know, she was in our house recently and, you know, Theo and her would go off and play together all the time. And then, you know, Freddie kind of just gets a little bit left behind sometimes, but just because he's, you know, slower moving and, you know, kids, they're always on the go. And, you know, and the other day, like, because he's walking and stuff, like, she waited for him to catch up and stuff and included him. And it's just like moments like that. You're just like, oh, these are the little moments that I'm just five star moments where I just sit back and I'm like, you know, this is, life is amazing. Yeah.
The moments we live for.
Yeah.
Like just a simple interaction like that, because that was your fear when you were given the news that day, is that he would be left behind. Mm-hmm. So to see, oh my God, I'm actually getting emotional even saying it, for him in that moment not to be left behind.
And it, like, when that happened in that moment, I was getting ready to go out the door because I was going out to something and Andrew was at home with the kids. And I actually started crying. And Andrew's like, are you crying? And I was like, yeah, like that was just so beautiful. Because there's little moments like that that you, they're the big things that you think won't happen. So when they happen in little moments like that, they're huge.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I just think that you were put on this earth to educate women, to, as I said, like, help women feel seen, to support women, and you never know where life might take you. And I just wanted to finish with just a thought that I was having. That lady that was cleaning the room in the hospital that day and what she gave to you, you're now giving to other people.
Oh, thank you.
You are that person. Tell us about your book just before you go.
Oh, God, this is like such a full circle. Like, as I said, from sitting in my car in April of 2022, listening to that podcast, like being here on your podcast talking about it is about my book that I've written is wild. But yeah, it's Raising Resilience and you can buy it on buythebook.ie.
Well, Tracy, thank you for everything today and everything you bring to the Good Glow community, like at Run Club. And every time I see you, I feel such joy in my heart. So thank you so much. And
thank you.
It's just been an amazing hour with you.
No, I've absolutely loved it. Thank you so much.
A huge thank you to Tracy for coming on the Good Glow today. Her Instagram, Three Bros and Me, is linked in the show notes. If you want to send her a message, please do. And her book is also linked, Raising Resilience. Her business, Andrew Holmes Catering, is thriving. Kitchen 28 is their cafe in Greystones and Kilcool. So if you're in the area, make sure you pop in and say hi. I'm hugely grateful to Tracy for our friendship. She is coming to Rome with us in October and we're going to run that half marathon. I'm so honored to know her. So next week, if you want to help your boat go faster, I have a brilliant episode coming your way. That's a big hint about what the episode will be about. And our show, our Christmas show, Jingle All the Way, it's taking place on December 6th, the National Concert Hall. It's our last Christmas show at the National Concert Hall. So grab the gang and come along. It's on Saturday, December 6th, 7 p.m. It's a 90-minute show. We've got live Christmas music, inspiring talks. We're going to wrap you up in a Christmas bow and send you out into December full of festive cheer and ready to rock for Christmas 2025. So the tickets are also linked in the show notes. And I'll see you next week.